And now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy. Welcome. It is Wednesday night, church night. It is the 19th. Is that right? 19th of September, 2018. The temperature here in Atlanta today was 93 degrees. The average high for this time of year is 81. Fall begins, what, Friday? Saturday? Hey, I want to remind you again about the book and the gathering that we are tentatively putting together for the North Georgia Mountains this fall, late this fall, probably in November. For all intents and purposes, the book is finished. It's not what has been posted at Kickstarter. But, you know, that's a pretty good representation of the book. But anyway, excuse me, we want to do this for a book signing or book launch party. And what we're doing right now is asking you to participate in a survey about when would be a good time if you were to come and what sort of accommodations you would like if you were to come. This is just a survey. There's no commitment here. We here at the Malloy Show don't believe in commitment. So if you would go to MikeMalloy.com and, answer a couple of questions there about your choice of date and accommodations. I'd appreciate it. And while you're there, if you didn't pre-order a copy of the book, you can pre-order a copy right there. And for the people who do that, who order it now, between now and, I don't know, a week, 10 days, I don't know, I'll sign it for you. I'll autograph it for you. when we get together, or I'll send it to you if you don't come to the meeting in the mountains. I'm looking forward to this meeting in the mountains because the place that we've picked to stay is a place that is part of the story in the book that I've written, where I had a very strange experience with a very interesting woman, a witch. And Kathy knows the story, so it's okay. This is long before Kathy, anyway. But that's where we're going to stay. I haven't been there since that particular experience. And it'll be interesting to me to see what happens when we get there. I have to be honest, I'm a little spooked about it. You know, a little bit concerned. But anyway, it's in the book. So I don't know if I went into detail at the book that's posted, the copy that's posted at Kickstarter, but it's in the final book. The book is 312 pages. That's on, you know, typewritten pages. I don't know how that's going to translate. Probably about 250 pages or 225 pages in book form. As far as the illustrations, I have to tell you something now. When Kathy and the people at Kickstarter, whoever it was, started talking about illustrations, this book, you know, I don't have photographs and illustrations from all the stories that are in this book. No, I don't. Some photographs. Oh, okay. We might have a few, but I don't expect some overwhelming picture book. It's not that any more than any other novel you've read has pictures with it. Now, this is not really a novel, but maybe it is. You decide when you read it. I haven't heard back yet from the library science master's degree librarian person who I gave the finished product to on Monday. Here it is Wednesday, and I haven't heard from him. And I've known this guy for 40 years. And I said, you know, James, let me know what you think. He said, sure, okay. Haven't heard anything. So I know, no news is good news. But on the other hand, I'm a little concerned about it. But I'll let you know. I'm so sick of Brett Kavanaugh and the machinations of the Republican Party, the American Fascist Party, in what they're doing. I mean, it's not surprising. These sons of bitches would do anything to get another fascist on the Supreme Court. That will give them a fascistic majority for the next at least 25 or 30 years. And the shit that the Republicans are pulling is just unreal, starting with the refusal to even give Merrick Garland a hearing after Barack Obama had nominated him all those years ago when Scalia went to the great Catholic shithole in the sky, right? So Mitch McConnell and these Republican devils, they waited and waited and waited and waited. And then with help from their Russian allies, their fascist Russian allies, they got this fucking Trump in. And now Trump has put this Kavanaugh freak up. And now this woman has come forward who talked about almost being raped by this son of a bitch. And what are Republicans on the Judiciary Committee? They're all saying, oh, what a tragedy it is for poor Brett Kavanaugh and his poor old lady and his poor family. Oh, Jesus Christ, to go through this. Well, you dirty sons of bitches, what about Dr. Ford? What about the woman who had to put up with this groping, slobbing son of a bitch trying to get in her pants 36 years ago? And I don't give a fuck. It was 50 years ago. It doesn't make any difference. But the way these Republicans are talking about this, she doesn't exist. Now, she does exist to the usual pack of rancid bastards out there, the attack dogs in the American Fascist Party, who have now forced the woman and her kids to move out of their fucking house to avoid the death threats and the bomb threats and the emails she's gotten calling her everything except a human being. You dirty fuckers. Boy, I'll tell you, the people who do this, I hate realizing that I share the same nationality with you pigs. And to tell you the truth, I mean, I go crazy like this. I really do. I just wish some kind of a plague would sweep through this country that only attached itself to right-wingers. I know, it's fantasy bullshit. And that once they contracted this plague, all of a sudden, they wouldn't have a mouth anymore. It'd be like those horror stories like the labyrinth, Pan's Labyrinth. Remember that creature down there? Had fingers on the tip, eyes on the tips of his fingers. He didn't have a mouth, did he? Oh, palm of his hand, that's right. Did he have a mouth? I don't remember either. That was a pretty horrible creature. Huh? But seriously, you people are so disgusting, you right-wingers, you devils who would attack a woman like this. But that's what you fuckers do. That's what you do. Make her life miserable. Threaten to burn her house down. Threaten to kill her. Threaten her children. You miserable. It just freaks me out. I have to share geography with you. Scum. But anyway, all this talk, too, about Kavanaugh, about, well, I believe in settled law, you know, I this, I that, where it concerns Roe v. Wade, fucking liar. And by the way, who do you think is lying? Do you think a woman like Dr. Ford would put herself and her family through this for a lie? She has nothing to gain by lying. Kavanaugh has everything to gain by lying. He is a liar, just like the person who nominated him. Michelle Goldberg, a couple of days ago, she wrote this. She writes that shortly after Trump's inauguration in this country, all of a sudden had the door open to fascism. She writes, shortly after his inauguration, Trump, uniquely attentive to his debt to the religious right, appointed an anti-abortion activist, one of these Christian fuckwads, E. Scott Lloyd, to head something called the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Now, E. Scott Lloyd had no experience. but he was vomited up in Trump's presence by these Christian sons of bitches. So Trump, being Trump, hired him. He gave E. Scott Lloyd the authority to make decisions about unaccompanied minors caught crossing into the United States. I bet this fucker's a child molester. What do you want to bet? And how did Mr. E. Scott Lloyd use that new authority? He used it to try to stop pregnant migrants who had come to this country, didn't realize they were pregnant, they got here, oh my God, from getting abortions. Last year, and you probably will remember this story, and this has to do with E. Scott Lloyd. Last year, a 17-year-old girl from Central America had to wage a legal battle to terminate her pregnancy. She was known in court filings as Jane Doe. I talked about this on the podcast, I remember. And the girl learned she was pregnant while she was in custody in Texas. And she was adamant that she wanted an abortion. In keeping with the parental consent law in Texas, she didn't have parents. She got the permission from a Texas judge. And she was helped in that process by a legal organization called Jane's Due Process. The organization raised money for the abortion, which was scheduled for the end of her first trimester. But under E. Scott Lloyd's nasty fucking Christian intervention, the shelter where she was being detained refused to cooperate. So she went back to court, and a federal judge again ruled in her favor, issuing a temporary restraining order against the Trump Crime Organization. The Trump Crime Organization appealed the ruling. Now, keep in mind what this is about. A 17-year-old non-American citizen who discovers she's pregnant, she's in fucking custody. There's no knowing when she'll ever get out. It's her first trimester. She wants an abortion, which is legal in this country. The Trump fuckers appealed, and the case, it was titled Garza versus Hargan. Garza is the 17-year-old girl. The case went to a three-judge panel of the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. One of the judges was Brett Kavanaugh. Now, remember what this lying son of a bitch said during his Senate testimony. Garza versus Hargan is the only major abortion rights case Kavanaugh has ever ruled on. And the way he handled the case offers a clue about what's in store for American women if this son of a bitch is confirmed on the Supreme Court. Now, obviously, as Michelle Goldberg points out, no one knows for sure, okay, whether Kavanaugh would vote to overturn Roe v. Wade outright or simply gut it. But even on this lower court that he was on, D.C. Circuit, he put arbitrary obstacles in the way of someone's desperate attempt to end her pregnancy. And thanks to this piece of shit in the presidency, Kavanaugh may soon be in a position to do the same to millions of others. Now, I'll get to what happened in a second. Maybe you remember. Michelle writes, it's fitting that last week's Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, 2 weeks ago, were regularly interrupted by the sound of women screaming. Remember that? Again and again, protesters, most of them female, cried out for the preservation of their rights and were arrested. And the Republican men on that committee, these dirty sons of bitches, like Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who's supposed to be this rational, laid-back, well-suited dude, he said shit like, what's the hysteria about? Hysteria? Michelle Goldman answers, let me answer. It is true, as Sass said, that protesters have claimed for many years that if Roe v. Wade is overturned, women will die. Sass admits that. It's a fair prediction because women died before Roe v. Wade, and where abortion is illegal, unsafe abortion leads to maternal death. In the past, however, Roe v. Wade has been saved. It's been preserved as part of settled law. Kavanaugh? If Kavanaugh is confirmed, Roe v. Wade will either fall or it'll be eviscerated. Now, in the case Garza versus, Roe v. Wade. In the case that Ms. Garza was involved in, Kavanaugh and another judge voted to end the temporary restraining order that prevented the government from hindering Ms. Garza's abortion. In other words, there was a restraining order by a federal judge that said to the government, get the fuck out of the way. Let this young woman do what she wants. I am restraining you. Kavanaugh voted to lift the restraining order. Bridget Amiri, an ACLU lawyer who represented the girl, was stunned because it seemed clear that the young woman, referred to in the court case as Doe, who'd already obtained the necessary judicial sign-off, it seemed like she had the law on her side. She had two courts rule, yes, let the woman go ahead. The ACLU lawyer, Bridget Amiri, said, quote, it wasn't what I was expecting from any judge that would have read Roe v. Wade. Conservatives, progressives, liberals, anyone. You wouldn't have expected this ruling from Kavanaugh. Indeed, a few days later, the full court reversed the three-court panel's decision that included Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh dissented to the reversal when the full court met, and he wrote that, quote, the government has permissible interest in favoring fetal life. By the time the young woman got her abortion, she was 15 weeks pregnant, 3 weeks into the second trimester, and needed a more complicated second trimester procedure, thanks to this fucking Kavanaugh, right? And in the first day of testimony for Kavanaugh's confirmation, Rochelle Garza, a lawyer who served as the young woman's temporary legal guardian during the proceedings, testified at Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing. Garza said of this 17-year-old girl, quote, she was one of the most vulnerable people in our community. She was an immigrant. She didn't speak English. She was in detention. She was being put under extreme pressure. And I, the lawyer, felt it was unfortunate that Judge Kavanaugh did not take that into consideration, end quote. Why should he? He's a fascist Christian fuckhead who has no problem trying to force a 15-year-old girl to fuck him. Why would he consider, I don't care if it's 30 years later or 50 years, why would he consider this young girl's situation? Michelle Goldberg goes on, we shouldn't expect a Trump nominee, no matter how personally decent his friends say he is, to care about a woman's wishes. Kavanaugh's defenders insist that he's the sort of judge any Republican would appoint, and they're correct. Still, it's a particularly bitter insult that women stand to lose reproductive autonomy thanks to the minority presidential victory of a louche or loche misogynist. I guess that would be Trump. Politicians sometimes say that they are personally opposed to abortion, but believe it should be legal. Trump and his enablers reverse that. Now it gets a little gamey. Michelle writes, the president, who does not, according to two of his, well, she says lovers, I'll say two of his fucks, he doesn't wear condoms. He's declined to say whether he's even been involved with an abortion. According to court papers unsealed on Friday a week ago, Elliot Broidy, former deputy finance chairman of the Republican National Committee, also refused to wear condoms during sex with his mistress, Shara Vekard, and then demanded she get an abortion when she became pregnant. That's the chairman, the deputy finance chairman of the Republican National Committee. According to the unsealed papers in that case, Broidy admired Trump's, quote, uncanny ability to sexually abuse women and get away with it. He admires it. So does Kavanaugh. A famous pro-choice poster from the 1980s proclaimed, quote, your body is a battleground, end quote. Kavanaugh is likely to join the Supreme Court because in 2016, the woman whom most women voted for was defeated. And now our bodies are subject to occupation. Why? I'll tell you what. I'm not going to sit here and ask the stupidest question I ever asked. Why is abortion an issue? It never was an issue until the religious fuckwads got involved in controlling that aspect of a woman's life. Now, granted, over the two millennia and probably over the period of time that human beings have been walking upright, the female of the species has had it kind of rough, you might say, huh? But imagine, as John Lennon wrote, there is no religion. And imagine that people have individual sovereignty over their own bodies. If you're a man, listening, nobody can tell you what to do or not do with your reproductive system. Nobody. And you carry in your testes enough sperm. If each one of them were to become a human being, you have enough sperm to probably overpopulate the world 10 times, just with you. But nature's that way, you know, always wanting to make sure that enough reproductive stuff is released in order to keep that particular species going. But nobody has ever told us, men, what we can and cannot do with our reproductive systems. Not that I'm aware of, ever. So any man who masturbates and ejaculates into a tissue or whatever, what's that song? Every sperm is sacred. Any man who masturbates and ejaculates not into the vaginal canal of a woman, where one of those little sperm may swim up and mix with the egg, that man has just committed mass fucking murder. Hasn't he? Or am I missing something? Without religion, this shit would not be an issue. These religion sons of bitches And all three Abrahamic religions are this way. I realize there are denominations of Judaism, and I guess now a couple of denominations of Protestantism that have backed away from this attitude of women do not have sovereignty over their bodies. But for the most part, the Abrahamic religions, who fucking hate women to begin with, all three of them. I mean, the Jews still, especially Orthodox Jews, Orthodox Muslims, Orthodox Christians, women are baby producers and house cleaners and shit like that. I've said it before. One of the grocery stores I go to in an ethnic neighborhood where I see a lot of Jews and a lot of Muslims, women. And they're all Orthodox, the ones I see, the ones that get my attention, because the only thing visible on the Orthodox Jews, the women, are their hands and their faces, and maybe their necks. On the Orthodox Muslims, the only thing visible sometimes is nothing. What's the thing called that covers every single inch? There's a slit for their eyes. No, that's not a burqa. A burqa, you said one time, a burqa was like a backyard grill cover. Hajib? Is it hajib? I should know these terms. But I have seen Orthodox Muslim women dressed in black from head to toe, black gloves on, black shoes, and a slit for their eyes. Now, what the fuck does that have to do with religion? Nothing. What it has to do with is the lust that seeing a woman's face or her hair might generate in a fucked up Muslim man. Why are Orthodox Jews who are women supposed to, same reason, cover up, bitch, cover up? Because if a man sees how beautiful you are, he may come and talk to you and then you'll immediately want to fuck him. So what is the Orthodox Jew or the Orthodox Muslim or the Orthodox Christian protecting? Not the woman. He's protecting his interest in the woman. So this shit's never going to stop as long as there's religion. And here we are engaged in this huge goddamn confrontation, this huge fight. And we can say, as I do, that Roe v. Wade was about a person's right to privacy. But the Christians and the Jews and the Muslims who are concerned about this issue, it has nothing to do with privacy. It has to do with controlling a woman's sex organs, reproductive organs. Think about the Muslim extremists who insist that girls, when they reach 13 or 12, must have their clitorises cut off. Why is that? A clitorectomy, so the woman cannot enjoy sex to the point, although I understand not being anatomically built like a woman, I'm just going by what I read, I understand that in some cases that's not always true, but removing the clitoris means it sex is no fun for the woman, and it's not supposed to be fun for the woman, it's supposed to be fun for the man. The woman is just supposed to open her legs and take the sperm and make more babies. This is fucked up. This is fucked up. Clitorectomies have nothing to do with politics and has everything to do with religion. Denying a woman's right to privacy where it concerns her sexual reproductive her reproductive organs has nothing to do with politics and everything to do with these fucking religions. Ah. Now, in the meantime, these holier-than-thou white fascist Christian assholes, like the ones that sit on the Senate Judiciary Committee, every single one of them is a voyeur to begin with. But let me share this with you. This is from Salon, Amanda Marcotte writing at Salon. On Monday, this is a couple of weeks ago, the Washington Post managed to publish the full text of a much-discussed memo that Kavanaugh wrote in 1998. At the time, Kavanaugh was part of a special prosecutor Ken Starr's team. See, Kavanaugh's been all over the fucking place in this kind of shit. And Kavanaugh was working on an open-ended investigation of Clinton that started with a right-wing conspiracy theory about real estate deals and wound up 9 fucking years later being about a sexual relationship Clinton had with Monica Lewinsky. The full text of this memo is telling for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's a picture-perfect distillation of the way that disgust and titillation are completely intertwined in the conservative mind and lay the groundwork for the political right's sadistic approach to sexual matters. And the other reason is that it offers yet more evidence, this memo does, that Kavanaugh is far from the fair-minded jurist Republicans are trying to make people believe, and instead clearly seems to be a partisan hack of the worst sort. On that latter point, there's very ample reason to believe that Kavanaugh will allow Trump to get away with all sorts of grotesque efforts to escape consequences for any illegal dealings with Russian agents. That's the real reason that Trump wants him on the Supreme Court. It's already been reported that Kavanaugh had pushed hard during his time in the Starr investigation to ask Clinton — he didn't, but he really wanted to do this — a bunch of explicit and repetitious questions about the sexual details of his relationship with Lewinsky. What this memo makes clear is that Kavanaugh's interest in granular detail was more penthouse forum than deposition. And his reasoning is made clear when Kavanaugh wrote this shit himself, that the goal is to pressure Clinton into resigning or admitting to perjury. See, Kavanaugh is a political operative. He's no more of a fucking judge than I am, although I would be a better one with 6 months training. He's a political operative. The idea was clearly to make the questions so uncomfortable that Clinton would capitulate. But whatever legal strategy Kavanaugh is advocating, it's hard to look away from how perfectly the memo that we're talking about captures the rat's nest of prurience and puritanical moralism that motivates the religious right, the same movement that hopes to use Kavanaugh to undo decades of legal rulings granting women and LGBT people sexual privacy and autonomy. On one hand, he decries Clinton for, quote, disgusting behavior that he says disgraced his office. On the other hand, he wants to know every single detail, rendered in maximally graphic terms. Where did you put your penis? Did she make it wet with her tongue first? Did she grab the shaft of your penis and slide her hand up and down it? Okay. Now, this isn't the fucking memo, Kathy. I'm sorry. Kavanaugh played, conservatives have long tried to leverage legitimate feminist concerns about power imbalances in relationships, like the one Clinton Lewinsky got into, in order to paint conservative interests in this case as high-minded instead of leering. Bullshit. Did you really think that anybody on Starr's team gave a fuck what Clinton and over 21-year-old Monica Lewinsky were doing having an affair? Do you think they gave a shit about that other than as a way to get to Bill Clinton and impeach him, which they did? We see Kavanaugh playing the same game in this memo, blaming Clinton for turning Lewinsky's life, quote, into a shambles. Although Monica Lewinsky said over and over again, there was no shambles, there was no pressure. It was a mutual affair. Now, we can make the argument until hell freezes over, you and I, but we're not clinical psychologists, are we? That the power differential between Clinton and Lewinsky put Lewinsky in a position where she had no choice, but that bypasses the fact that both Lewinsky and Clinton have testified, have said that Lewinsky made the first move. Do you want to see my, what do you call them?
G-string.
Not G-string. You want to see my thong, Mr. President? Woo-hoo! Now, when they say that Clinton was exploiting Lewinsky, they leave out the salient fact that Starr and Kavanaugh and all these investigators worked with right-wing operatives to put Lewinsky, to out Lewinsky, and parade her around for months in the public square. In this memo, it's clear that Kavanaugh's plan was to draw out Lewinsky's public humiliation even further by rooting around for more explicit details. What does his penis look like? Did it hurt when he inserted it?
They never had sex.
No, I'm talking about in her mouth. Oh, yeah, the cigar. Kavanaugh later tried to distance himself from this abusive attitude toward Lewinsky, saying, he said, quote, I regret that the House of Representatives did not handle the report in a way that would have kept sensitive details in the report from public disclosure. But in the heat of the moment, Kavanaugh was the big advocate for using sexually explicit details in the language that you don't normally use, oh, how to say this, in mixed company, at least not back in 1998 and 1999, and to use it as a tool of public humiliation for political gain. Kavanaugh didn't give a fuck about Lewinsky or Clinton. Or Clinton's wife, or Clinton's daughter. And now you hear these whining sons of bitches talk about, oh, Brett Kavanaugh's daughters and his wife, what a horrible thing for them to go through. You phony fuckers, every one of you, you didn't say any of that about Hillary or what's her kid's name? Chelsea. Nothing. They were just collateral damage, you dirty sons of bitches, you. What's equally telling, Amanda Marcotte writes, is how full-throated Kavanaugh was in his belief that Clinton deserved no special protections from legal inquiry or consequences, even though Kavanaugh's anger, as captured in this memo, is largely about a legal sexual relationship. There was nothing illegal about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton doing each other. There was no illegality there. There were moral or ethical implications, but nothing illegal. Kavanaugh denounced Clinton for, quote, frivolous privilege claims when he claimed executive privilege and didn't want to testify. And Kavanaugh says he is, quote, strongly opposed to giving the president any break in the questioning when the president was Bill Clinton. Kavanaugh's strong objections to the idea of executive privilege dried up the second the topic was something other than exposing the frequency of Oval Office ejaculations. As soon as 1999, Kavanaugh had switched to argue that a court decision to release the Watergate tapes was an erroneous decision because, quote, it took away the power of the president to control information in the executive branch. The Nixon case was an abuse of power. The prosecution of Nixon. The persecution and eventual prosecution of Clinton was perfectly dead center right on. And we want this fucker on the Supreme Court? The rest of this is redundant. But to vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh is really a vote to end settled law in so many issues, constitutional protections that have been ruled as constitutional protections over the past 30 or 40 years. Kavanaugh and these other four fascists on the Supreme Court are going to shred the Constitution and the rulings that have come as interpretations of the Constitution. This idea that Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and Roberts and Alito and that lump of charcoal that sits in the fucking corner, Uncle Clarence, that they are going to honor settled law, honor the rights of minorities, honor the right to collective bargaining, honor Roe v. Wade is a fucking joke. And anyone who believes otherwise is trying to sell you something that, trust me, you don't want to buy. I'll be right back. Standing tough under stars and stripes, we can tell this dream's in sight. You've got to admit it at this point in time that it's clear the future looks bright. All right, video will start in a moment, I guess, there it is. Hello, video. Another part of this that this whole Kavanaugh thing, I watched Trump today as he went to New Bern, North Carolina, and talked about himself. But Trump today offered one of those, I got a helicopter to catch, but go ahead, what's your question? He offered a defense of Kavanaugh saying, quote, it's very hard for me to imagine anything happened, end quote, with the woman who has accused him of sexually assaulting her when Kavanaugh and she were teenagers. It's hard for Trump to imagine anything happened. This guy who went on Howard Stern's show many times and on a couple of occasions talked about having sex maybe with his own daughter if it wasn't his daughter, who said that, you just got to go up to women and grab them by the pussy. They love it, especially if you're famous. And this is the son of a bitch who said this morning, it's very hard for me to imagine anything happened with Dr. Ford and Kavanaugh. Try come up with some image in your head, right? Trump went ahead and praised Kavanaugh as, quote, an extraordinary man with an unblemished record. Trump never heard of this guy until the Koch brothers and the Heritage Foundation and some of these right-wing groups said, here's your list of people to pick from. Trump doesn't know this fucking guy from Adam's house cat, but he says his stuff. He says what Kavanaugh is experiencing is, Trump's word, unfair. It's unfair. And for some reason, he also said that Dr. Ford deserves to be heard by the Senate Judiciary Committee. I wonder who got inside his head. His daughter? He said, quote, if she shows up and makes a credible showing. Well, you know, she's a woman. How the fuck can she do that, Trump? If she shows up and makes a credible showing, he says, quote, that'll be very interesting. That phrase, and we'll see. We'll wait and see. Those two phrases, he has overworked to the point where every time I hear them now, it just sets my teeth on edge. And he says, if she shows up and makes a credible showing, we'll have to make a decision. Decision about what? Apparently, decision about jumping Kavanaugh and going to the next fascist on his list. Now, as you've heard, and I've mentioned before, lawyers for Dr. Ford have said repeatedly that she wants to testify, even given what the terror that she and her family are going through right now from these pieces of fucking puke that are Trump followers who are threatening her and her family. But before she testifies, she wants the FBI to investigate what she's saying. Come and investigate my allegations. Then I'll go testify. Why isn't Kavanaugh saying that? And the only one who has the power to order that investigation, it's not the little goblin Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. It's not the Christian freak fuck Mike Pence. It's our exalted leader himself, Trump. He's the only one because it's his nominee. Senate didn't come up with Kavanaugh. Trump did. So Trump's the only one can order. When he was asked today, are you going to order? I think it was Casey Hunt from MSNBC shouted at him, are you going to order an FBI investigation? And I think the answer he shouted back was something like there's no need for it or some such bullshit. But this is the spot they're putting Dr. Ford in. She wants to testify. The senile old fucker Chuck Grassley, who's the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, we'd like to have her testify. And so many of these right-wingers are talking testify, testify, but they're putting those restrictions on. Well, what did Graham Cracker say today? Well, if she doesn't do it by Monday, we ought to go ahead and have our vote. You little fucker, you. And even Corker, Bob Corker, the great, I'm retiring next year, so I don't give a shit what I say about Trump. Even he came out today and said, well, if she doesn't agree to come, we ought to just go ahead with the vote. And Grassley has said, we'll be happy to send people out there to interview her. Anything to avoid an investigation into this charge. Because if it is investigated, can you speculate as to what the FBI might discover? But you know, the FBI, according to Trump, are a bunch of losers anyway because they don't do what he tells them to do. And they don't protect him. Chuck Grassley said, where I'm focused right now is doing everything we can to make Dr. Ford comfortable with coming before our committee. Satan himself wouldn't be comfortable coming before your fucking committee, Grassley. Are you kidding me? I'm even willing to send staff to talk to her in California, if that's what she prefers. Oh, and Corker, you know, this little shit. He said, quote, after learning of the allegation, Chairman Chuck Grassley, I guess he tweeted this, Chairman Chuck Grassley took immediate action to ensure both Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh have the opportunity to be heard, in public or private. Republicans extended a hand in good faith to Dr. Ford. If we don't hear from both sides on Monday, let's vote. Now, this is the same little evil shit who said that this hearing should be put on pause until the panel could hear from Dr. Ford. Lindsey Graham cracker dismissed calls to reopen FBI background investigation in Kavanaugh. He called it a delay tactic. Well, Lindsey, I don't know if it's happened to you before. It may have. It may happen in the future, although you are getting kind of old. But if some big dude starts climbing on you and trying to get your pants and your shirt and your tie off, are you going to just... Well, it's kind of an unfair question for you, Lindsey. Never mind. Senator Jeff Flake, who, like Bob Corker, wanted to hear from Ford as quickly as possible, Flake urged her to come before the committee. He's the one from Arizona who's retiring. This is what he said, quote, when Dr. Ford came forward, I said that her voice should be heard and asked the Judiciary Committee to delay its vote on Kavanaugh. It did so. I now implore Dr. Ford to accept the invitation for Monday in a public or private setting. The committee should hear her voice. But see, unlike a lot of people who just stumble in front of this committee and expect that these animals, these white men who comprise these questioning panels, whether it's House or Senate, the witnesses come forward and expect that the questions are going to be fair. They're going to have a chance to answer without being interrupted repeatedly. Those are the people who usually leave these hearing rooms battered and bloodied from the kind of disrespect and shitty treatment that they get as witnesses. And this is what Dr. Ford is concerned about. What if she starts to go into detail about what this pig fucker did to her and somebody like Grassley or Orrin Hatch, the great Mormon, were to interrupt her and say, now, Miss Ford, we're not interested in all these kind of... Well, my question was, I want a yes or no answer. She knows what's going to happen. That's why she wants the FBI investigation. With the FBI investigation... With the facts laid out, as an independent investigative body would lay them out, then she would have a foundation on which she could make her testimony. But these fucking Republicans, why do it that way? All right, is it break time? It is break time. Let's take a break. We'll be back. I'm going to shift gears when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Molloy.
My name is Luca. I live on the second floor. I live upstairs from you. Yes, I think you've seen me before.
You hear as I mentioned last night, I think it was last night, Miles is sponsoring all during this week. I think it's Miles. So here is Miles's message. See if you can figure this out, okay? What marketing method is seen by 95% of targeted individuals within 3 minutes is cost-effective, mobile-friendly, and works with all other types of advertising? The answer is text marketing. Okay. Miles then adds, call Miles at 602-666-1313. Sounds like a hotline to hell, doesn't it? Mention Mike Malloy and receive your first month free. That number again is 602-666-1313 and ask for Miles. Mention Mike Malloy and get a free month of service. Okay, Miles. It is church night, of course, and I just don't do church night anymore because, like I said before, it's very hard to parody something that already is a parody. In fact, it's damn near impossible, so I've been told. But just this little item about Ms. Trunchbull, Trump's press secretary, a.k.a. Sarah Sanders, you know, whose daddy was a former governor of Arkansas and a Baptist preacher. But there was a recent New Yorker profile of Ms. Trunchbull. And the article was trying to determine why somebody who claims to be a devout Christian has no problem at all lying constantly for a pig like Donald Trump. How is that justified with her so-called Christianity? Well, in part, the article concludes that the reason it is so easy, and this is so true of so many of these fucked up evangelicals, it's so easy to break the commandment of not bearing false witness. These people crack me up. The reason it's so easy is because Donald Trump has actually kept the promises he made to the phony-ass, belligerent fascists who like to call themselves evangelical Christians. He has. And Ms. Trunchbull and the rest of these evangelical liars say that Trump is the first one to keep his promises to the so-called Christian community. A lot of candidates, according to the evangelicals, a lot of candidates have made promises and then they don't follow through. And it really pisses off the evangelicals because the evangelicals think that a president has dictatorial power. If in a campaign the president says, well, I'm going to make sure that abortion of the unborn little cute little teeny babies is absolutely done away with, Roe v. Wade will be overturned. He doesn't have that power. But the evangelicals who are used to living their little fascist lives, religion is fascism. Look at the Protestant church. Look at the look at the Catholic church. The Islamic faith. Judaism, not so much. They had their own fucked up situation. But it's hard to see Judaism as being fascist. Hard for me. But Islam, and especially Christian, hoy, Jesus, so to speak. So part of being a good evangelical Christian in these times when the Christian church is becoming more and more and more corrupt, criminal, and irrelevant, eventually it will be, one of the most important reasons that they back a pig like Trump is because of his appointment of these hardline neo-fascist judges. See, the Christians like that. They have rejected entirely, for the most part, the messages of Jesus, his three or four sermons. They don't give a fuck about that anymore. Because everything that that their Redeemer said, if translated into contemporary political theory, would wind up being democratic socialism. Leave off the democratic. It would wind up being socialism of a benign sort. And these Christians, their own goddamn leader told them, their avatar told them to do this. And fuck you, Jesus. We don't care about what you said. We want hardcore right-wingers in the judiciary. So there you go. And the piece in The New Yorker cited the religion reporter for The Washington Post, Michelle Boorstein, who says that evangelicals are happy to have a president who will do what they say, which is stark contrast to other politicians who have broken promises to Christian conservatives. So as a result of the broken promises, or not as a result of, but in tandem with the broken political promises, now is the rise of this Christian fascism where they don't give a shit. They don't care. They don't care how evil and fucked up Trump is as long as he appoints conservative judges. These evangelical Christians will throw away every single word that their Messiah told them, every single admonition. Fuck it. Out the door. Out the door. And believe it or not, most evangelicals, and this is a part where I just say to evangelicals, stay the fuck away from me because you people are insane. Here's why. According to Baptist pastor Brian Kaler, most evangelicals see Trump's 2016 election victory as divine intervention that justifies almost any kind of immoral behavior by Trump. God's own hand put him in the White House. Kaler said, quote, it's more than you're defending a politician or even a president. You're defending God's chosen leader for this time. Well, if that's the truth, God, go fuck yourself. I mean, if you select this, and this is the same God who said, I'm bored today. Oh, I know. I'll have 6 million of my people brutally executed. Fuck that God, okay? You want to believe in that God? You go right ahead, you sick puppy. Whew! So, anyway, Ms. Trunchbull, that's her justification for her lying and her deception and her bullshit, is that she is only following up on her Redeemer's decision to give the people of the United States a sick son of a bitch like Trump. Ain't religion fun? Enough for church night. I avoided it last hour. That's it for this hour. Done. I've got an update here of the midterms, something put together by the Washington Post. Where are we? Yeah, okay, here we go. Trump is privately lashing out at one of his top Florida allies, a real racist, anti-Semitic piece of shit, Ron DeSantis, who's running for governor. And the reason Trump is lashing out at him and has accused DeSantis of publicly betraying me, that's what Trump says. He publicly betrayed me. How did he do that? DeSantis did not endorse Trump's claim that the hurricane death toll in Puerto Rico, Maria, was exaggerated to make him look bad, to make Trump look bad. Politico's Alex Eisenstadt and Mark Caputo report like this, quote, he doesn't believe any loss of life has been inflated. That's what the DeSantis campaign said last week after Trump tweeted that 3,000 people did not die. And Trump's comments apparently temporarily unnerved Republicans across Florida. Not that Republicans give a fuck about people dying. I mean, that's your great reward. When you die, you get to fly up to heaven. So why are they concerned about dying? Because you might also go down to hell. Anyway, Trump feels that Ron DeSantis, who's a former congressman now running for governor in that fucked up state of Florida, Trump feels that DeSantis is indebted to him politically. Because he believes that DeSantis owes his electoral success to him, to Trump. See, Trump makes people. Trump is like the creator God. I can make you a gubernatorial candidate. I can make you governor. You little fucker, you didn't come out and back me up. And Trump, as sick as he is, keeps saying privately that he's correct about the hurricane's death toll. And he is very, very frustrated that Ron DeSantis has, in Trump's fucked up brain, crossed me in this matter. He didn't. Why, that dirty little prick. Florida Governor Rick Scott, who is running for the Senate, says here, quickly left a campaign event after he was confronted by demonstrators protesting his response to Florida's toxic algae bloom. The Herald Tribune reported that Scott was confronted by angry protesters at the Mojos Real Cuban restaurant in Venice, Florida, where dead animals have been washing ashore. Protesters crowded outside the restaurant holding signs reading, "Red Tide Rick," and calling Rick Scott a coward, forcing him to enter and only minutes later leave through the back door. I saw the video, did you? Video shows Scott quickly leaving and getting into a black SUV as supporters held up signs, "Rick Scott for Senate! We like a governor who fucks up! We like a liar! We're Christians! We like a liar who does nothing to help the poor and the infirm and the sick! We love him because we're Christians!" Ah! And here in Atlanta, a federal judge denied a motion that would have forced Georgia to switch from these crooked electronic voting machines to paper ballots. Federal judge said, no, fuck you. We've got it how we want it. We can alter elections. We can steal elections. You want paper ballots? Fuck you, you know. The judge sided with state and local officials here in Georgia who argued that last-minute changes would make unnecessary chaos ahead of the elections November 6th. Oh, it'll be too chaotic. We can't do it. Okay, you fuckers, then do it for the next election. Apparently, that never came up. However, U.S. District Judge Amy Totenberg, this cracks me up. Just a little aside here. Amy Totenberg. Amy and I used to work for the Great Speckled Bird, Kathy. Her sister is I forget the first name, the Supreme Court correspondent for NPR Radio. Amy is the judge. What's the other one? Anyway, Amy and I used to write for the Great Speckled Bird here. She was, I forget what her position was. I think she was just like most of us. It was the Atlanta Writers Collective. And none of us really had any titles. I think we did have a managing editor. And, you know, that was 45 years ago. And I still run across here in Atlanta. I run across some of the people I worked with. It was not predominantly, but heavily weighted toward feminist ideas. This is back in 74, 75, 76. The Bird was founded as an anti-war journal at Emory University back in the late 60s, but then it had to move off campus because it was way too political. And Emory University is, after all, a Methodist college, university. But anyway, Amy was one of the people in the staff, in the staff box. We were all in the staff box. But So when I saw her name the other day, and I didn't realize she'd become a district court judge, I only can say, thank goodness. Because I know Amy's politics. I haven't seen her in 4 decades. I wouldn't know her if she walked in here right now. I'm just saying back in the day. So that Amy Totenberg, who's now a U.S. district judge, warned the state of Georgia that it must tackle these issues of election security promptly. And she wrote this, quote, "As I have said many times, our state needs a verifiable paper trail, but we cannot make such changes this election cycle." Okay, if Amy says it, I'll go along with it. Excuse me for calling her Amy. I'm not trying to come across as, I know important people. But when you work with somebody, you know, 45 years ago, we were all young. Well, not so much me, but a lot of these people were so young. Jesus, they were in their mid-20s, late-20s, all idealistic. The Great Speckled Bird, look it up online if you want to have some fun. The Great Speckled Bird was called itself the Radical Voice of the South. And at any given time, we had factions that worked for the Bird that were Maoists. I didn't like them. They were too grumpy. Leninists, they were okay. Stalinists, you notice they're all commies, right? They had Red Brigade types. They had Attica Brigade types. They had lesbian feminists. They had what was left over, they didn't use this term, but the Mattachine Society, which was gay men that goes way back to what, the 40s and 50s? And this was kind of a holdover out of respect for the people who 45 years ago were, you know, they were old by then. They were in their 80s, but they had put together a male gay rights or gay protective society. We also had the Black Panther faction. It was one hell of a group at the Great Speckled Bird. And as long as I'm talking about it, before I move on, the way we got things published, our paper was never more than 36 pages. Sometimes it might be 40 or 44. Even in the heyday, it was very difficult to get advertising. And we tried selling it for 25 cents a copy. That went over like a lead balloon. The Bird had always been free. Well, it had been 25 cents. And then people just stopped. We wouldn't pop a quarter, so we started giving it away free. But the way we got things published in the Bird, we would have our editorial meetings. I think it was on Wednesday night. And everybody would show up. And by Wednesday night, all of us who had written, and everybody wrote, even the person who did the typesetting. Yeah, typesetting. And the advertising copy people. And everybody wrote. I mean, that's what it was, the Atlanta Writers Collective. And we had kind of a circular responsibilities. Sometimes you had to clean the toilet. There was just one. You had to sweep the floors. You had to clean the ink off the typesetting machine. You had to do all the, you know, all kinds of shit work as well as writing. But we'd all get together Wednesday night with our little articles clutched in our hands, right? And you had to lobby the group. We'd all sit around in a circle. And there might be 15 or 20 of us on a Wednesday night, depending on how much space might be available in that edition coming up. So we were all there to lobby to get our pieces into the next edition. And it was really funny because we tried to go with Robert's Rules of Orders or whatever it's called, Rules of Order, whatever it's called. We tried to keep the meeting orderly and peaceful as possible, which usually lasted for about 10 minutes. And then invariably, You know, this faction of communists would scream at that faction of socialists, who would get very pissed off at that faction of the gay rights people, who would start yelling at the black power people, who would turn around and accuse the whole fucking group of racism. But it was just, and eventually we would weed it down if there was space in the paper for a certain number of column inches. We would weed it down to the point where the submissions would equal the available column inches in that particular issue. And if somebody had a piece that was a little bit too long but insisted on getting it in and have it win the argument, then that writer would have to cut off a paragraph or two. And that was always fun, too. Amy Totenberg, now a U.S. District Judge here in Atlanta. Bless her heart. Those were the days, my friend. Kansas Republican Nancy Kassenbaum, who represented the state for three terms, 18 years in the U.S. Senate. She's the daughter of, by the way, of Alf Landon, who was the Republican candidate for president in during the Depression, right? 1936, I guess. And Nancy Kassenbaum announced that she is backing the Democrat, Laura Kelly, who is running for governor of Kansas. God, I hope. what's his name? Has so fucked up. Everything in Kansas. Anyway, the Kansas City Star reports this, quote, Kassenbaum joins former Republican Governor Bill Graves, who announced earlier this month that he also will be supporting the Democrat candidate. How about that? Bill Graves, former Republican governor, said, quote, I'm a Republican, but that doesn't mean you walk lockstep always with the party. Now, Kelly is facing that Kobach fucker, the Republican nominee. He, the Republican Secretary of State, he was the one that was supposed to go out and find the millions and millions of cases of voter fraud that would prove that Hillary Clinton did not win the popular vote. Chris Kobach, remember that piece of waste? Nancy Kassenbaum said, quote, it seems to me that Kobach has developed a record that shows a focus on ways and how to accomplish his goals that I think are not the best for Kansas. Ms. Kassenbaum, that is the understatement, political understatement of the year for somebody living in Kansas, right? Hillary Clinton. I don't know if you saw her interview with Rachel Maddow. Was that last night?
Yes.
Yeah, last night. She argued the Democrats absolutely need to win control of the U.S. House this November so that the Democrats can serve as a check on this move by Trump and his cadre of fascists as they try to move the country way, way, way to the right. She said in the interview with Maddow, quote, what I worry about, Rachel, is that after this election, this president is going to wholesale fire people. And if we Democrats don't have one or both houses of Congress in place, he will be even more uncontrollable and unaccountable. He will fire people in the White House. He will fire people in this administration who he thinks are crossing him, questioning him, undermining him. End quote. He really is a sick son of a bitch. I don't know if you saw him this morning when he was in North Carolina. I think he was in New Bern for a while. But sitting at a long table with all the state and federal officials who were there to try to deal with this horrific global warming tragedy that hit North Carolina and South Carolina. But they're all sitting there, and Trump does his usual bullshit chit-chat that sounds like somebody who is so divorced from reality. If you popped up and said, yo, 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 what's your name? He would go, ow, fuck, trick question. But after getting through the chit-chat, then he does this. He puts his head down and he goes like this. And now I'd like to say that the people of the United States are offering all kinds of support. I mean, he had to read a simple goddamn message of concern. Now, it's understandable because Trump has no compassion at all for anybody except himself. He lacks the ability, because he's such a fuckwad, he lacks the ability to understand other people's points of view, other people's suffering, other people's dreams, other people's hopes. They don't mean shit to him. He can't relate. Everything is secondary to him. Consequently, if he shows up someplace where he's supposed, if he doesn't have notes, he'll start throwing rolls of paper towels. He has no fucking conception of what a leader is supposed to do in a crisis where the death toll continues to go up. It's in, what, the low 40s now, upper 30s, where property damage is going to be in the multiples of billions of dollars. Lives have been utterly destroyed. This son of a bitch. So he winds up outside handing out styrofoam meals to people. People were pulling up in cars, and he was handing out meals. Now, that's supposed to be an act of courtesy or generosity or compassion. Horseshit. That's a photo op. What he should be doing is get his useless, large, bulbous ass back to Washington, call in the leaders of the House and the Senate, the House first, and say, I want a complete assessment of the damage, and I want an emergency appropriations written by you people in the House, confirmed by you people in the Senate, to help these people, and it's going to be billions. And I want the process slimmed down so that people show up, prove their losses, and you give them a fucking check, and get it done now. No. It's much easier to hand out fried chicken sandwiches and potato salad. If you have a script that tells you how to do it. Jesus, I dislike this man. Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia. Remember him? He was Hillary Clinton's running mate. He has an almost 20-point lead over Republican Corey Stewart. That's a good thing. Corey Stewart is a Klansman. I don't know if he has a sheet in his closet. I don't give a shit. He's a white supremacist. He's a Nazi. That's according to a new poll. Here's what it says. A poll released Tuesday by the University of Mary Washington in Fredericksburg, is that, I guess that's William and Mary, shows Kaine leading Stewart 49% to 30% among all respondents. Libertarian candidate Matt Waters received 5%. Although 73% of Republican respondents said they would vote for Stewart, of course they will. Of course they'll vote for a fascist. Of course they'll vote for a Nazi and a Klansman. Of course they will. 73% of Republicans say, oh, yeah, I'll vote for him. 15% of Republicans favored Tim Kaine. Well, we'll have to hunt them down and take them out behind the shed and blow their fucking heads off, right? Not going to allow that. Among Democrats, 90% support Kaine. And a third of all of those surveyed said their feelings toward Trump would be a major factor in how they vote. Let's just hope they vote. All right, we're coming up on a break here. So so let's do it, and we'll come back. And there's a couple more things here in the midterm stuff I have here. And then I want to tell you about mega death in North Carolina. We'll be right back. Can we get to tell you what a real- So back to a little bit more of this midterm coverage before I move on. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, who's a Republican, has a pretty good lead over the Democrat who's running against him, Ben Jealous. You've probably seen him on MSNBC. A poll released early this morning found likely voters favor the Republican governor over Ben Jealous, the Democrat, by a margin of 54% to 32%. The undecided voters in that poll have dwindled to under 10%, which means that Ben Jealous has to win the lion's share of persuadable voters, ones who still haven't made up their minds. And that would require tremendous turnout from the Democrats on Election Day. In addition to the Republican Governor Larry Hogan securing his Republican base by large margins, the poll found he also had the support of 38% of Maryland Democrats. And the Democrats in Maryland outnumber the Republicans by a vote of 2-1. So apparently Ben Jealous is just not the candidate that the Democrats in Maryland want. Texas Republicans flipped a seat that the Democrats had held for more than 130 years. That's a state Senate seat within, you know, the state of Texas. San Antonio paper reports, quote, a retired game warden, Pete Flores, defeated former state and U.S. Rep. Pete Gallego for the Senate District 19 seat. And the Republican received backing from Lieutenant Governor, or the Governor, Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, U.S. Senator John Cornyn, Ted Cruz, blah, 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 blah. Now, the win by this Republican, Pete Flores, retired game warden, according to what I have here, marked an incredible upset in a district that political observers said shouldn't have even been competitive for Republicans. But here's the deal, and this is how the Democrats, unless Democrats wait the fuck up, this is going to happen across the country. Low turnout and high-level Republican interest in preserving Senate supermajority helped Mr. Flores win, the Republican. Low turnout from the Democrats. This happens repeatedly. The truth of the matter is that most Americans, and I, you know, I'm basing what I'm saying here not just on polls, but on the research done by social scientists over the past 50, 60, 70 years. Most Americans, the majority of Americans, favor the political positions of Democrats by a majority that would indicate that the Republicans would always be the minority party, always, except perhaps in a few state and local elections. But regarding the overall running of the government, the vast majority of Americans favor the policies, political points of view of Democrats. So why aren't Democrats in control? Because Democratic voters don't fucking go vote. And at a time when we know that our electoral system is under attack by fascists in Russia, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, wherever the fuck they're coming from. At a time when we know that our system is under attack. Anybody who says they are a Democrat and does not go vote on November 6th, then you are, I'm the fuck mention words, you're a goddamn traitor and you're a coward and you're a son of a bitch for not getting off your ass. I don't give a fuck if you're in a wheelchair. I don't care if you're in a hospital bed. Get your fucking ballot and vote. Because if you don't, you won't be in your hospital bed. You'll be thrown on the fucking street by the fascists. You won't have your wheelchair. It'll be taken away from you when they slash and burn Medicare and Social Security. And if you're a woman, every single right to privacy that have accrued to you since 1973, out the fucking window, gone. And it just goes on and on. The shit goes on and on. You're a student old enough to vote, and you're thinking about going on to university, or you're in university. You want to be hamstrung for the rest of your life with this debt? These so-called student loans? Horseshit. That's not student loans. That's usury. It's horrible. Then don't go vote. Fuck it. Right? You're above that. You're 20 years old. You didn't cause any of this shit. So why should you try to clean it up? Well, I'll tell you why. Because if you don't help clean it up by your goddamn vote, that's all. You don't have to get a broom and a dust mop. Just go fucking vote. Because if you don't, and these Republicans maintain control, you're fucked. Your future is fucked, as is your children's, if you decide to have kids. If you're a person of, I hate this term, if you're a person of color and you don't go vote, Democratic, I can't even begin to tell you the consequences, because you have lived them. And if you haven't, your parents have. And if they haven't, your grandparents have. So we'll see, won't we? As Donald Trump likes to say, well, we'll see what happens. But if you're a Democrat and you don't go vote, then you are a willing co-conspirator in destroying the country. It's on you. It's on your fucking back. Oh, it's on mine, too. But I don't miss voting. Ever. Ever. And that's not a feather in my cap or a badge on my chest. That means I understand survival. Survival. So if you don't vote, Democratic, then get comfortable with the noose around your neck, because it's going to start tightening. Get comfortable with the idea that it's difficult to breathe. Get comfortable with the idea that nuclear power plants are going to start eroding and collapsing and spewing radiation all over the goddamn countryside because of environmental factors. Get comfortable with the idea that your food and your drinking water and everything is going to be full of chemicals and shit, because any attempt to regulate predatory capitalism is going to be gone forever. That's what your vote means, goddammit. I'm not going to mince words with you. If you don't go vote Democratic in this election, you're committing a form of personal treason. Why would you do that? Death, mega death in North Carolina. The number of hogs and poultry killed in the flooding from Hurricane Florence is already double the casualties of the horrible Hurricane Matthew 2 years ago, 2016. And according to the New York Times, or the Raleigh News and Observer newspaper, the losses are expected to mount this week as new information comes in from farmers, as they're able to go back and see what the damage is on their properties. Meanwhile, and remember I told you about this before this happened, the number of hog shit lagoons, okay, hog waste, that's a lovely word. When you say hog waste, people go, oh yeah. When you say hog shit, it gets your attention. And when you go further and say hog shit loaded with bacteria and viruses and parasites, those lagoons in North Carolina that are damaged or overflowing, the number of them continues to increase. How many of these lagoons? Isn't that a nice word? It's a shit lagoon. Oh, You mean like Blue Lagoon, the movie? No, Shit Lagoon. Virus, bacterium, parasites. How many are there? Hold on, it's here. Where is North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality. That's one of those agencies that's not allowed to say the words global warming. The agency has not inspected any, not one, of the 3,300 pig shit lagoons in North Carolina. And the agency is relying on self-reporting by farmers. Have you ever seen one? I lived in Raleigh. I know. One of these hog shit lagoons, it's the most horrifying thing. The stench, you can start smelling it depending on which way the wind is blowing. You can start smelling it 10 miles away. As soon as you get past this horror, you can start smelling another one 10 miles away. North Carolina Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services said yesterday that so far, 4 million chickens and turkeys have been drowned. 5,500 hogs have been drowned. In addition, or I should say, in preparation for the advancing storms, farmers were moving their swine to higher land, but the intensity of the flooding exceeded the expectations. So the hogs were moved up to higher ground where they died there. When a hog dies and starts to decompose, it smells like a human being decomposing. Did you know that? Which in turn smells like a rat decomposing. That's where the term "I smell a rat" comes from. It's a stench you will not forget if you ever get it up in your nostrils. So the people of North Carolina, in addition to the horror they just went through, now have billions of gallons of hog shit and viruses and parasites and corpses floating around. Why is that? Because the hog industry, the factory farms, the ones owned by the Chinese, which I believe are the biggest hog producers in the United States now, the Chinese, they don't give a fuck, and neither does the state of North Carolina. There are no rules on the books that say anything about, hey, wait. You can't have 3,000 lagoons full of hog shit and viruses and parasites open to the air. You can't do it. Nobody has told them that. So they keep doing it. This is what is meant by the term predatory capitalism. The people who run these hog operations, fuck you, they don't live there. Oh, they have some managers on the farms, maybe. Can you imagine what their lives are like? The Agriculture Agency, North Carolina Department, provided no details as to which counties suffered the greatest losses. The only specifics have come from a note to investors issued by Sanderson Farms. Now, I don't know the name Sanderson. It makes it sound like, oh, you mean Bill and Judy Sanderson. No, fuck no. That's a made-up name. It is now, anyway. Sanderson Farms, they issued a note to their investors, not to the public, not to the state health department, not to the state agriculture department, not to the federal, to their fucking investors, that said 2 million broiler chickens out of the 20 million that they own in the state drowned. If they say 2 million out of 20 million, you can be sure it's probably closer to 8 million. Sanderson Farms said that 60 broiler houses and 4 feeder houses were flooded. Farmers who are contracted to Sanderson could be put out of power for as long as 3 weeks. and are running on emergency diesel fuel. So in addition to the hog shit, the bacteria, and the corpses, and the stench, and the poison, diesel fuel. Sanderson Farms noted that about 30 independent farms that supply its chickens are isolated by floodwaters and unreachable at this time. Each of the farms house about 250,000 chickens, totaling more than 6 million chickens that can't be reached with chicken feed. Well, what chickens will do is start eating each other. They're very cannibalistic. And eventually, some of these cannibal chickens are going to find its way into your Kroger store or your Publix or whatever your grocery store is, only you won't know it. You'll see packets of chickens sitting there. Oh, look at the nice little thighs and drumsticks and breasts and things. My suggestion is don't buy anything, any kind of animal product that comes from North or South Carolina. And you can find out. If it doesn't say on the package, ask the store manager. If you are a meat eater, and I am, you better make sure that whatever fowl or meat or eggs that you buy for the time being comes from someplace other than North or South Carolina. You should always buy organic stuff anyway. Free-range chicken, if you eat eggs. I'm not lecturing. I don't give a shit what you eat. You know, if you want to go to McDonald's, it's, you know, do it. I'm just saying from a health standpoint, okay? An environmental agency said that 13 of these hog shit lagoons are overflowing and 55 more are close to overflowing and will overflow because the water levels are continuing to rise and will continue to rise for probably another 4 or 5 days, at which point 50, 60, God knows how many of these so-called lagoons, these holding ponds, and this is just pig shit. There's other stuff too. Coal mine tailings. There is nuclear waste. Now, you can't stop a hurricane, but you can be environmentally aware and conscious enough to prepare for it by not having open air hog shit lagoons. In addition, it's assumed that some farmers have not yet seen the state of their hog operations because they lack access to their properties. This is a monstrous fucking disaster. Monstrous. The Pork Council. Hi, I'm on the Pork Council, which is an industry advocacy organization, issued an advisory of its own saying that of the four hog shit lagoons that are compromised, only one has been breached. That's a fucking lie. This is where predatory capitalism, they don't give a shit. If you wind up eating pork from North Carolina anytime in the near future, you run the risk of dying a horrible death. Horrible death. Parasites, E. coli, all kinds of shit, ripping your insides to pieces. You better not go near this shit. Literally shit. The Pork Council said, well, it's just one place, a lagoon on a small farm in Dublin County. Water flowed out through an opening in the wall, but the pit retained most of the fluids and solid waste material. Huh? Sound nice? That sinks to the bottom of the lagoon, according to the Pork Council. So when a lagoon is breached and all this filth and disgusting stuff comes over the side and into the watershed and God knows where it winds up, well, the big lumps of hog shit, it's okay. They float. They go to the bottom. The fuck they do? I have seen this stuff. Nothing goes to the bottom. Oh, The Port Council said, quote, "We do not believe, based on on-farm assessments to date and industry-wide surveying, that there are widespread impacts to more than 2,100 farms with more than 3,300 anaerobic treatment lagoons in the state." You know what anaerobic, anaerobic means? Without oxygen. Doesn't it?
Yeah, that means they dump bacteria in there.
Yeah, they dump bacteria in to eat. I can't. Yeah, it's like a giant septic tank. Okay, I got to stop. We're about out of time anyway. Jesus Christ. Well, there are going to be some health problems on a massive scale in North Carolina caused by this stuff, not by the flood in and of itself, but by the shit that is being unleashed into the North Carolina environment. Coal ash ponds, chemical factories, landfills, hazardous wastes, and pig shit. On that note, I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Hey, Truth Seekers, I have an important update for you about my upcoming memoir, A Hunter Thompson-esque Journey of Experience, Observation, and Political Awakening of Yours Truly. It's about 90% finished and soon headed to the publisher. It's posted in book form on the Kickstarter page for supporters who pre-ordered the book. And you can read it online right now. Just go to the Kickstarter page. Photos, hate mail, and other memorabilia will be added to the print version. And I think you'll love that. Did you miss the pre-order offer? Well, if you did, don't worry. You now have a second chance to order the book online. And since all the original rewards are claimed, I'll sign your copy as a special second chance pre-order thank you. So visit MikeMalloy.com for all the details. Oh, and coming soon, watch for updates on the fall book signing glamping weekend with the Malloys in the North Georgia Mountains. Keep checking MikeMalloy.com for more information.